This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening, TSN1290.ca. Good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. 2 hours of hockey talk for you. Joining us on the program, Scott Powers from ESPNChicago.com to preview Friday night's Jets-Blackhawks, the big rematch since the Daniel Carcillo incident. And then at the top of the next hour, Marty B. Ron, TSN, RDS, NHL Network analyst, also the director of goaltending at the Academy of Hockey, is going to join us to talk about the NHL. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. And we start last night in Vancouver, the Winnipeg Jets losing 3-2 in overtime. We'll also touch on Calgary on Monday night where they lost 5-2. Jets now having lost five straight games since the All-Star break, earning a grand total of 1 point, that being the point they earned last night in overtime. Let's start there. Your thoughts on last night's game? Better performance, the best performance by the Jets since the All-Star break ended?
Yeah, Drew, I think it was probably their best performance, but I mean, that's not exactly a high standard.
No, it's not. It's damning with faint praise, as they like to say.
A lot of penalties still. That's an issue. We can talk about the refereeing, but at the end of the day, too many penalties. Didn't really touch the puck too much in the first period. The top line, which was not performing very well and was not noticeable at all against Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, has, you know, got going a little bit there against Dallas. But I thought it had been particularly a lot better against Calgary and Vancouver. But then, of course, as soon as that line gets going and kind of starts carrying the weight, the second line has been nowhere to be found. Mm-hmm. So one of the problems without having top-end talent is you need your guys to go at the same time. And if they're not going at the same time, you know, you're going to have trouble scoring goals. And that's what's happening right now. And, of course, the lack of depth. So there's been a lot of things. But we can talk all about that. It's team defense, and we've spoken about this on Saturday show. Mm-hmm. Team defense, you know, that whole idea of ensuring the forwards and the defensemen are playing closer together. You can take issue with the goaltending, whatever. Maybe I thought for the most part Pavic was very good last night. The second goal was terrible. You can't let that goal in, and it ruins a great performance.
That's right.
Because really, I mean, he had held them in there for periods of time early in the game.
Sure, I mean. Yeah,
he was a lot of tip shots, as Brian Engblom pointed out.
That's right.
Was absolutely a very accurate assessment. A lot of change of direction plays that he was pretty good on, staying strong on the post. Just that was a bad goal, and you know that cost him. Obviously, that's not that one play again. This is a team game.
Sure. I mean,
people like throwing him under the bus every opportunity they have, and certainly he hasn't had a great season. He's been fine, but he hasn't had a great season. But there are other issues too. You know, defensive breakdowns, the third goal.
Yeah,
overtime. I mean, everybody. There are people at fault here. Players at fault. And the thing about a goaltender is a goaltender lets in a bad goal like that, Ezzy, and then everybody talks about it. Well, when Mark Scheifele essentially has been completely invisible for a couple weeks now,
mm-hmm.
you know that's a topic, but not the main topic.
Well,
the pressure of goaltending.
Mark Scheifele, having that good scoring opportunity and not capitalizing, and then feeding the puck blindly was the first time you really noticed him in a. Like you said, a couple weeks, he's been sort of invisible out there. Ezzy, your thoughts, what did you take away from last night's game?
I thought the Jets played well, and, you know, I thought especially in the third period, the Jets played well, and, you know, it was a little bit too little too late and not enough because they needed the 2 points when you consider that they only have 1 point in their last 10 games. But, you know, put together a little research here on the Jets' goal scoring. And, you know, Richie touched on it a little bit here, but to me, this is a problem that is almost as big, if not bigger, than the Jets' defensive problems. The Jets, and I'm going to go on a little bit here, but the Jets have scored 146 goals in 53 games, okay?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's about middle of the pack in the NHL. When you look at the top line of Brian Little, Andrew Ladd, Blake Wheeler, plus Matthew Perreault, who's having a career year, 17 goals,
mm-hmm.
Those four players combined for 48% of the Jets' goals, half the goals. So you're talking about a Jets team right now that isn't getting enough production from other players that aren't those four players. And we're talking Mark Scheifele, one goal in 20 games. We're talking Adam Lowry, I believe, one goal in the last 17 games. We're talking Michael Frolik, two goals in the last 16 games. Evander Kane has four goals in the last 14 games. Zero in the last four games. Didn't play, obviously, against Vancouver. But to me, it seems when the Jets need a goal, it's either Andrew Ladd, Brian Little, or Blake Wheeler. And before that, it was Matthew Perreault. And to me, this team just isn't getting secondary scoring. I thought Pavlik kept them in the game. And they killed off six penalties against the Vancouver Canucks. We saw how many penalty after penalty for the Winnipeg Jets in last night's game. And really, that's been something that continues to be a problem and has been all year. I think it really was illustrated in that Pittsburgh game earlier in the season when there was 100 combined penalty minutes. But to me, you know, I agree with Richie. The Jets have definitely, you know, they've given up 23 goals in their last five games. There's some empty net goals in there. But, you know, it's averaging over four goals a game given up. But to me, again, you're looking down the bench, and if it isn't Ladd, Little, Wheeler, who's scoring goals for this team? And it's time, you know, that other players step up. And it's not just the first line that's always getting your offense.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point you make there, because, you know, that first line last night, I thought Blake Wheeler played a terrific game last night for the Jets. Yeah. He was, and you know, the Calgary game, he started off like a house on fire there too, of course, scoring in the first, you know, what is it? I guess it was 71 seconds or whatever it was.
Skating really well the past couple of games.
Yeah. And you can almost tell how Blake Wheeler's going to be early on in a game, because it sort of, he sort of either has it at puck drop or he doesn't. Mm-hmm. And when he's going, the Jets are such a threat. But as of late, to your point there, Ezzy, they just don't seem to be able to get everybody going at the same time. They haven't been able to get all three lines going.
That's the if, Drew, and that's because they don't have as much talent as some of the other teams.
Sure. And they were playing over their head, I think, before the All-Star break.
Sure. I mean, they're not as bad as they're playing right now, and they're not as good as they were before. That's a classic cliche, but it's true.
Right.
I mean, let's be honest here. This is not the 76 Canadians here.
And Richie, what I think you're starting to see is, especially when the Jets were without their top four defensemen there, so we're talking late December through you know, the mid-January mark, I think we're starting to see that because Matthew Perreault was one of the hottest scorers in the league, I think some of that lack of secondary scoring was covered up here. And, you know, that's not to say, though, that the Jets need to be better defensively. I mean, they really do. And, you know, I don't think that the goaltending has been as good as it was, you know, over the first 40 so games of the season, Rich. But I also think that, you know, you look at a situation like last night, Evander Kane's out of the lineup, and I know we're going to get to Kane later, but Kane's out of the lineup, so you have to move Buff up. Adam Party comes in. I didn't think Adam Party did that bad of a job, especially when he was called on, you know, on the penalty kill. But you're in a situation now where your D pairings are changed, because you already broke up Bogo. So you put Bogo with Enstrom, and you already broke up Ben Chiarot and Dustin Byfuglien. But now, so you've had a rotating cast of different D pairings. So to me, you know, there's some serious causes for concern. I was listening to you guys on Saturday, and you asked Richie, you know, how concerned he was on a scale of 1 to 10 with the two losses. He said 4.5. Right now, it's got to be 8.5.
Really? You're that high? You're getting close to that panic button.
I hope either today or Saturday we can get into the schedule. Of the Jets' remaining 29 games, only four are against teams that are out of a playoff spot.
Clearly out of a playoff spot. That are playing for next year.
So the Jets are in serious danger. And again, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, be Mr. Negative here or the bearer of bad news, but I'm saying here, the Jets have gone now, they've lost five in a row here since the All-Star break, and you're playing a lot of good teams here coming up. And you know, you got to get this on the right track. So again, I think they can, but there's some serious causes for concern here, I'll say that.
Yeah, and we'll of course analyze the schedule as we go through the games and everything, but you're right to your point there, Ezzy. The next four games, starting Friday night against the Chicago Blackhawks, and you know this is an angry Blackhawks team that's going to come in here, and we'll preview that game next segment. The next four games are all against division rivals. You have Chicago on Friday, you got Colorado on Sunday, Minnesota on Tuesday, and then you go to Nashville on Thursday. Pekka Rinne being back in Nashville's net. Yeah. So, I mean, this is to your point there, Ezzy, and it's, you know, I saw you were tweeting about that earlier in the day. You know, four games against teams that are clearly out of a playoff spot, and I think that's two against Edmonton, one against the Leafs, and one against I don't know who the other one was.
One against Ottawa, one against Toronto, right. Two against Edmonton. Richie here, but
you play against teams that you can make ground up on, or you can gain, create a distance between yourself and the other team. So if you're Winnipeg and you're looking at Colorado, well, yeah, they're in a race, but you're ahead of them in the race. Sure. Really, you're a better team on paper. You're a better team on paper than Vancouver too.
Yeah, Vancouver doesn't have. I mean, Vancouver's offense just isn't what I would describe as high end.
Their puck movement at on the power play was tremendous. It's an even strength. They can't create enough separation skating wise in some of their lines. That's mm-hmm. the issue.
Do you think that they've hit cliche rock bottom? Do you see the team going back on an upward trend at this point in time, or do you think that there's still more problems going to develop?
Before Ezzy and I answer that, what's an upward trend?
Well, I mean,
is
points.
That better than this is obviously, it's inevitable. The question is,
Friday night, do you think you're going to see the post-All-Star break NHL Jets or the pre-All-Star break Jets? Or, I mean, obviously not. It's not a black and white issue.
I think you'll see a better performance. But again, when you're playing against a better team that hasn't been playing particularly well lately, but a better team that you've beat three times this year and clearly is angry that you've beat them three times this year. You have the Carcillo element. Maybe that emotion. And the Perreault emotion, I bet you Paul Maurice will want to ride that, even though, again, discipline's been an issue. Of course, we know that. But Perreault and the Carcillo, you wonder if Chicago drops Carcillo in the lineup.
He didn't play. He was eligible to play last night in Minnesota because he actually missed one game before his suspension was officially announced.
Yep.
And they chose not to put him in the lineup in Minnesota. I would suspect he's going to be in the lineup against the Jets tomorrow. We'll talk about that, Friday.
Yep.
But, you look at it, and I mean, to your point there, if you're on an upward trajectory and you play, I mean, I think if you play like you played last night and even better than you played last night against Colorado, say on Sunday,
you'll be fine.
Yeah.
You'll be fine to get in the playoffs, I think. But again, what you've done with the last five games, and as you talk about who they're playing against, what you've done the past five games losing is you brought Colorado, Minnesota, and Dallas, and LA, obviously. You know, LA is now six in the wild card chase.
Yeah.
You've kept them all around. Like you really, you got 1 of 10 points. If you have 4 more points right now, you're sitting 10 points ahead of the next team. Now you're 6 points ahead, and every team behind you has either 2 or 3 games in hand. LA, Dallas, and Minnesota all have 3 games in hand, and Colorado has 2. And I know these teams play each other and all that, but if you lose a couple of clean games to these teams over the next little bit, ooh, you got to watch out. So back to this roster, I want to talk about this quickly. Clearly yesterday you could see that they were a little bit scrambled, and we'll talk about Kane next segment. But this is, as he was talking about earlier in the segment, about secondary scoring. Are they going to get any help from the outside? Because there's two conversations. Do they get in, and if they get in, can they cause havoc? I'll put it this way. If they get in and play Nashville in the first round, you could say you don't necessarily believe in Nashville, whatever it may be. But if you have Shea Weber up against the top line every night.
I believe in Shea Weber.
Who's creating scoring opportunities. Now, does that mean you're going to go out and obtain somebody to do that with the short-term or long-term in mind? I mean, I don't think anybody here is advocating for mortgaging the future, but at some point, some of these pieces, and I think the guy we'll talk about next segment, the other shoe needs to drop.
Yeah.
I think you make a really good point, Richie, and I absolutely at this point think the Jets need to bring someone in, especially if you continue to slide here. And the Jets have really, as you mentioned, they've let some other teams like Colorado, like Dallas, like mm-hmm. Calgary, like Vancouver catch up to them, and you're still not getting goals from guys like Michael Frolik and Mark Scheifele and Evander Kane. I think you have to bring someone in because then you're in danger of missing the playoffs. And I think the way the Jets played, especially in the first half of the season, it would be a shame if they didn't make the playoffs. But as we've said before, all it takes is a little 3 or 4 game, and it's not little at this point because it's a 5-game losing streak, but a 5-game losing streak before didn't used to be what it was. But with all the 3-point games, Richie, that's all
absolutely.
It takes to go from 4th in the standings to 7th in the standings, or 5th in the standings to 8th in the standings. So the Jets really, as you mentioned, we can talk all we want about how well they did and the things that they did that were well. But really, all that matters now for the next 29 games is points. That's all they need.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss Evander Kane being a healthy scratch last night in Vancouver. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Hi, this is Drew Mindell. Some surprises are good. like a big comeback win. Some aren't, like internet overage charges. That's why MTS high-speed internet is unlimited, so you won't be caught off guard by surprise overage charges. Switch to MTS high-speed internet from only $20 a month for the first 3 months. Conditions apply. Call or visit your nearest MTS store for details.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Yeah, coach's decision not for him not to be in the lineup tonight.
Just leaving it with that, or
what do you think the chances of you getting more are? We work together. I've just been doing this long enough that most of these aren't that difficult to do.
Jets head coach Paul Maurice addressing the healthy scratch of Evander Kane last night prior to the game in Vancouver. Welcome back to NHL Midweek. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Just announced, tickets go on sale this Friday. You know him from Little Man, White Chicks, Scary Movie, and In Living Color.
White Chicks, for sure. Remus knows him.
Yeah. I've never seen him. Really, Remus? I'm shocked to hear that. Sean Wayans going to be at Rumors April 16th through 19th. So Remus is very excited. He wants to get in on this immediately.
Yeah, grab the mic.
Grab the mic there, Remo.
Just to clarify, I've never seen White Chicks, but that is Dave Minuk's favorite movie.
Yeah, he loves that movie.
Yeah, so Dave will be first in line to see Sean Wayans at Rumors April 16th through 19th.
Remus, how many Wayans brothers are there? I think there's like 10.
Marlon, Damon, Sean, Keenan Ivory. I think there's one more.
Isn't there a Remus Wayans?
That's pretty good, though, right there.
Yeah. And there's Damon Wayans Jr. now is in movies. That's the craziest part.
Really?
Yes.
Have any of the Wayan brothers ever been on the Wayan before us on Saturday?
That should be. That'd be a good tie-in, promotional tie-in right there.
Well, just tell Sheldon to put two tickets aside for Dave Minuk and I.
Yeah, he'll say who's Ezra. Anyways, let's talk about Evander Kane and the healthy scratch last night in Vancouver. You know, obviously, this is a pretty clear shot across the bow of Evander Kane getting healthy scratched in his hometown, a game you know he had circled on the calendar. Now, obviously, we don't know the reason. We're not going to speculate because that would be unprofessional of us to do that. But, you know, there's so much chatter about Evander Kane in this city over the last number of years and whether or not he wants to be there. And we're of the opinion he doesn't really. Is this the beginning of the end to you, or is this just sort of another speed bump in the saga of Evander Kane as a Winnipeg Jets player?
Well, what's the beginning of the end, Drew? The beginning of the end would require Kevin Chevalier to have to trade him.
Yeah.
And we don't have any indications that is on the horizon. You hear some rumblings once in a while, and a little more lately maybe, and there's some things that may make some sense, but you know, he's yet to make a trade, so how do we predict he's going to make a trade? Right, that's the thing.
Sure. That you'd be going out on a limb saying that given there's no evidence that he's ever done anything along those lines.
And some people say, you know, they'd be less likely to make a trade before the deadline because there's cap reasons and things like that. Maybe that's true. Sometimes I think that's a little bit overblown, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the fallback excuse that every general manager uses, is that's what it's so hard to make a trade.
I feel like that's part of it, Drew, to be honest. But, you know, the question is, when you look at it, is it time to move him? And of course, you don't move him for 10 cents on the dollar because of this incident, whatever it may have been. But at some point, he's playing on your third line. And I think he's been effective in that role, but you're not paying him to play in that role. And we know what he is. No, we know what his skill level is, and we know what he can bring to the table. Is he going to take the next step in Winnipeg? And is this a place in the locker room for him to succeed? And if it is not, which, I mean, I think this move ought to be made at least at some point in the near future, whether that be now or in the summer. If he does, you know, if you trade him and he succeeds elsewhere, I've said this on the show before, and he succeeds elsewhere, that does not mean he would have succeeded or would succeed here. And that's a big thing for general managers to take into account, and that's a pressure that they weigh in their reputation that they have to deal with. It's like Alexei Kovalev, talked about him before. Alexei Kovalev was in New York a long, long time, and they finally traded him eventually, I think it was in the late 90s, for Peter Nedved. kind of a similar player, really, in that the talent level exceeded the production many times.
Sure.
And sure, Alexei Kovalev went to Pittsburgh and he had, you know, his 90-whatever point season, and he had some great seasons. But it's the talent that he had, and it was frustrating to be able to get it out of him, and it wasn't consistent in getting it out of him. You always worried that the place he would go would be the place that he would take it to the next level, and Neil Smith, or whoever the general manager was, would be the one who traded him away. And I think that's part of it here. I do think that's part of the rationale, and it's, you know, Kevin Sheveldayoff as general manager is protecting himself, I think, in a sense, and he's certainly not alone in that regard. But he's worried that he trades him. You know, Kevin Sheveldayoff trades Evander Kane, just for example. I'm just making up a trade here. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard anything about this. To Colorado, straight up for Ryan O'Reilly. Okay, forget the contract situations and all that stuff.
Yes, this is strictly a hypothetical.
And Ryan O'Reilly comes, you know, he does a lot of things, but he gets, you know, 45 to 50 points. He plays power play, penalty kill. A real valuable asset to the team. And Evander Kane goes to play in Colorado with Nathan MacKinnon and scores 40 goals
and
and he gets 30 goals a year for 7 to 8 years. How do you view it? He may have scored 15 to 20 goals every year on your team, and the player you got was able to help you in different respects, and probably more so than Kane would have. But people don't think about that and know that. Now, you'd think with the 7-year contract he's basically been given by management, by ownership, excuse me, that they would take that into account as well, and the trust that they have in him is reflected in that contract. But,
yeah.
You know, there's a reality to this, right? And that's you have to deal with your other managers, and you're worried about letting your boss down and all those things. So I'm not saying this is what's happening. This is my perception. It doesn't mean that they're getting great offers, but they've certainly got offers for this guy. Like, if you think the Eagles in the National Hockey League don't think he could perform in their city, crazy, because he can shoot it, skate, and he's big, and he's physical.
Sure.
Now, I think there's a lot of shortcomings to his game. I think there's there's issues with his attitude. There's no question about that. If you watch him enough, you know that. But there's people in the league, if you look at other players that people have taken chances on, they think that they can make a 20-goal score, a 30-goal score, and a 30-goal score, a 40-goal score, and a 5-goal score, a 10-goal. You know, it's every role.
Sure.
Everybody thinks they can do a better job, so it's certainly that how offers for him. The concern, if you're a Jets fan, is the offers aren't getting any better. He's got less term. The flaws in his game have become more noticeable than before because you've had a bigger sample of seeing him. And, you know, you may not be willing to give up as much. That's the concern if you're a Jets fan.
Ezzy, before I let you get in, equal time. This is what TSN's Bob McKenzie tweeted out about probably 90 minutes or so ago. On the Evander Kane situation in Winnipeg, how best to put this? It's complicated. While Kane was termed coach's decision / healthy scratch last night, there is a specter of injury here. There may be some underlying non-injury issues as well that factored into his absence last night. I would expect we may have a clearer picture of Kane's status in the next 24 hours. The one thing about Kane that is absolutely certain is he's played through a multitude of injuries this season.
With due respect to Bob McKenzie, that doesn't say anything.
It's very cryptic.
With due respect.
Yeah.
I think
nobody knows more than him about the game as he is an insider, but that doesn't say anything to me.
And we're told that it wasn't an injury and it was a healthy scratch. Nothing, there's no indication here.
Absolutely.
And he mentioned non-injury related issues, so I'm not sure if that would have to do with mental or off-ice issues. I'm not sure about that. But, you know, back to, you know, Richie's line of, you know, thought there, I think you make a lot of good points, Richie. Evander Kane right now is by low, 10 goals in 46 games or whatever it is. And this incident that just occurred, you know, the healthy scratch, this isn't going to prompt Kevin Sheveldayoff to make a move. And certainly, I think the reason why this healthy scratch of Evander Kane is so troublesome is because of the timing. They need Evander Kane right now to be scoring goals. And I got to say, Evander Kane, I think, on the third line, whether it was with Chris Thorburn and Adam Lowry. Adam Lowry has been the staple of that third line, but whether it was with Adam Lowry and Chris Thorburn or Adam Lowry and Matt Halaschuk, I think Evander Kane has found his game more than when he was on the second line.
I disagree. And I want to get in there, because I don't disagree. And I think
you don't disagree.
I don't. And I think the team has actually played better with him in that role.
Right.
Problem is, if you're not going to be a cap team, you can't spend that much money on a third line left winger.
Right. And the reason why it's so troubling, not only because you needed the 2 points against Vancouver yesterday, Richie, it's because Paul Maurice hasn't even said that Kane's playing on Friday. And they asked him, is Kane playing on Friday?
Good point.
Very straightforward question that I don't know who asked it. And he said he didn't say yes or no. So we're not even sure if he's playing Friday. Now, as far as Bob McKenzie's point goes, I mean, there have been rumor after rumor. I mean, it feels like we've been talking about Evander Kane being possibly traded for 10 years, and the Jets have only been back for 4 years. So, is Evander Kane going to be traded? I would think there's a high chance that he does not get traded before this season ends. As far as in the off season, I mean, to Richie's point, I mean, at a certain point, do you think that the environment not conducive to getting
enough.
Kane to this next level? Because, you know, we've been talking about, is Evander Kane going to take the next step for at least 2 years now, maybe 3 years, and it hasn't happened. You know, I think, you know, at times this year, he's produced, but, you know, again, 10 goals, he's playing on the third line. As Richie mentioned, he's making, what, $4 or $5 million a year?
It's 5.3 cap hit, right?
So you can't be paying a $5 million left winger. Third line left winger. So at a certain point, he's probably your most tradable asset right now as a forward with the term on his contract left. What does he have, 3 years after this year?
Yeah, I believe so.
So I agree with you, Rich. I don't think he'll be traded. But
I mean, I think
there
it's
might
more
be something else
I think
going
it's
on here.
More possible that he gets traded. Now, people are like, they won't trade him now because it's a leverage issue. You don't know what the offers have been up to this point. You don't know if they're comfortable. You don't know if a team thinks there's an opportunity here and ups their offer. Like, I don't think you should look at it that way.
No, I mean, you don't know. I don't think it's not like he's holding out as far, you know, there's no sign that he's not going to report to the next game whenever he does get back into the lineup. So
you don't know what
I don't think the screws are being put to the Jets, really, at this
point. I think I would bet on him going to the Eastern Conference if he gets traded.
Sure.
That's part and parcel with what I was saying before. Whatever amount of goals he scores elsewhere is better off if you don't see him.
You only see him twice a year.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. I mean,
he's not going in division, I would guarantee it. So then that leaves, seven other teams.
Well, and most of the places where he's been rumored to have the most interest have been Eastern Conference teams already.
Drew, if Evander Kane is going to succeed on a team, he has to go to a team with structure. Mm-hmm. And by structure, I don't mean defensive structure. I mean leadership structure. He needs to go to...
And I think it's improving here. It's just not as strong as it is in other
teams. I'm saying the team, the fit, that the places that he would be a fit. Mm-hmm. You know, you're looking at team, if we're saying the Eastern Conference, places that he would be a fit, he needs to sit down, he needs to be down the totem pole. He probably is here anyways, but he needs to be down the totem pole. Like, say, you know, example, playing underneath a Crosby Malkin, where you know who, because if you even saw, we've talked about this before in the show, Evander Kane deferring to the likes of Olli Jokinen. Like, he has a deference to star power. You watch, I can see that. That's my observation of him. If he were to go to Tampa Bay, for example, I don't think they're necessarily interested, but that kind of team, he knows, hey, Steven Sackos is better than me. I don't think he feels on this team that anybody's any better than he is. That's how I feel. Like, if he were to go to Anaheim, for example, I don't think he's going to go there again, but Anaheim, he knows Getzlaf, Perry are better than him. And he would have to defer to them in some way.
We will monitor it, as we always do. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Scott Powers from ESPNChicago.com to talk about Friday's Jets-Blackhawks game. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast, on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Shortly after 6:30 in the evening, you're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to be joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by our good friend from ESPNChicago.com, Scott Powers. Scott, good evening. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, as always. Scott, we sort of got to start with going back to the last time these two teams met. Daniel Carcillo, the cross-check on Matthew Perreault, was eligible to return to the lineup last night in Minnesota. He didn't. Are you anticipating that Joel Quenneville is going to put him back into the roster for Friday night?
I don't know. You know, I expect a switch-up somewhere at some point with this team. They're obviously not producing, and there's some inconsistencies, especially in that fourth line where Marcus Kruger and Ben Smith and Joakim Nordstrom have really been haven't really scored or done anything lately. You know, they've been okay defensively. So I guess considering the situation, he might be wary of that too, just knowing what happened last time. Maybe that's something he takes into account. But I expect Carcillo back in the lineup at some point, but it may not be tomorrow just considering the circumstances.
Scott, you wrote about this for ESPNChicago.com and your blog, and you know, I think it makes a lot of sense. You know, you look at where the Blackhawks are, and they have struggled. We talked about that earlier on in the show. 6-8-0 since January 1st, and you know, the Winnipeg Jets, if they can manage to beat the Chicago Blackhawks, you know, can again be closer up in the Central Division standings. Probably not going to catch Nashville. You know, you look at where the Chicago Blackhawks are right now. You keyed in on the power play, and it's been a problem all year. What does Coach Joel Quenneville need to do here to get this going? Because, as you know, in years past, that's been a real strength of this team.
Yeah, you know, the last few years, it's kind of bordered around that 15th place in the league, and maybe even a little bit worse. And I think it was slightly better last year, but. For the amount of firepower they have, it's an area they normally struggle in for some reason, and it's one of those things where it's, you know, they seem to pass the puck sometimes too often, looking for the perfect shot instead of a shot, and you know, some of the problems yesterday were with zone entries, and they've had some problems with the defending too, where just maybe having a forward back there on the at the point and getting beat, and they've allowed some shorthanded goals in that way, and. You know, it's something that's been a little bit inconsistent, actually a lot inconsistent throughout the season, where there's a few stretches where they've played all right and, you know, they've scored at least a power play goal, you know, for certain stretches, but in other words, they look like a complete disaster out there. I know it's something that they try to, you know, try to concentrate on, and obviously had a couple different coaches, you know, in that position in the last few years trying to assist it, but it really, for whatever reason, it just doesn't click, and it's something that I know they're constantly asked about, and things that they're trying to work on. They obviously do a lot of video, but for whatever reason, it just they can never really get it going consistently.
Scott, how much of their trouble right now is just emotional? You hear the LA Kings now, obviously, are in a difficult position right now. They're trailing a bunch of teams to get in the playoffs, but the idea that it's sometimes hard to get up for these games, and you look at Chicago sitting in the 3 seed, you know, they may think that they're fairly comfortable in playing St. Louis, a team they've played the past couple playoffs, and whether, you know, the 6 points between those two teams, in reality you're talking about one home game. How much do you see this team on cruise control a bit?
Yeah, I don't know. They went through this last year too. It was, you know, a different circumstance last year with the Olympics and the shortened off season, but you know, around January they really kind of struggled, and really didn't come out of it until late in the year, and then obviously going into the playoffs, they played pretty well. But I think that's something they're aware of this year too. It's something they want to avoid. You know, they picked up their play in the playoffs, but you know, even then against the Blues, you look back. I mean, the Blues could have won that series if three goes differently. And I don't think that's what they want to. You know, they don't want to have that mind, so we're just going to turn it on in the playoffs. So I think it's a growing concern. You know, the fact is they were shut out the last two games, and that's the first time that's happened since I think. 2006, you know, and just, you know, the 6-8-0 and since January 1st. I mean, these are bad trends, and they want to fix. And you know, one thing, Corey Crawford's playing well, so I think that's a positive for them. You know, I mean, the goaltender, he had struggled in December at coming back from his injury, but he seems like he's back on point. And you know, for the most part, the offense has been there lately. You know, aside from these last two games, you know, Kane's been playing, you know, at an all-time high in Sod, and the top line's been pretty good. And defensively, there's just not, I don't know, they just haven't had the balance they've had in the past, and Quinville's tried to switch it up where he's, you know, he's taken apart Seabrook and Keith and O'Doey and Jomelson and tried some different things, but they don't have the depth there they've had in the past, and obviously losing Micheletti and trading away had to do a factor into them.
Just going to say, yeah, Scott, on that point, you know, Micheletti certainly helped the transition game, and even skating that puck through the neutral zone and just the ease with which they could create offense seems to be a lot more difficult now.
Yeah, I mean, Micheletti was obviously in a lineup, and he brought a lot. But then a guy like Michael Roosevelt was, you know, in and out of the lineup, and now he's playing every day. And a guy like David Rundblad has some ability, but you'd probably like some sort of rotation there. And even now, Johnny O'Doo's had some troubles where he's been pretty much a rock the last 2 years, and his play has been pretty inconsistent this season too. So, you know, they knew that there was a risk when they traded Micheletti, and obviously they had to do that because he signed Brad Richards, and they wanted that second-line center. But, you know, it's really gone against them. And Trevor and Van Riemsdyk should be back sometime, probably in the next month. So there's some hope that maybe he, you know, he gets back to form and he brings some solidness to that pairings. But even that, I mean, he's still a rookie, and they expect him to be, you know, to be something in the playoffs. And, you know, Quinville's also, he doesn't always have trust in guys in the playoffs. You know, if you're not rock solid through there, you know, Letty experienced that. And even in the last few years, he's cut down Seabrook's minutes in the playoffs when he hasn't played well. So I think that's the one concern the Blackhawks have. I think the offense, those things will come around, but the defensive pairings and just the depth there, it's not the same it's been the last few seasons.
Were you surprised, Scott, to see Adam Clendenning traded? We saw, you know, Jets fans saw him play last night against Winnipeg Jets in Vancouver. Was that a surprising trade for you, or what was the reasoning behind that move?
I think it was just they realized they weren't going to have he wasn't going to factor in the future, and I believe that he was going to have to clear waivers next season, and it was probably a situation where they figured, you know, we should get something for him now. He came up for a couple games this season, showed some potential, but they've never really been sold on him as a defensive player and his defensive skills. So, they're pretty stockpiled down in the AHL. We haven't seen a lot of those guys yet come up. When they traded for Tim Erickson for Jeremy Morin from Columbus, they kind of closed that door on a lot of those guys. I mean, they have seven defensemen up now, and an eighth one, Van Riemsdyk, comes back. So many of those guys in Rockford and AHL, they weren't going to get a chance. So I think that they saw it as an opportunity to get something for him now instead of losing him maybe down the line for free.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. Our guest is Scott Powers of ESPNChicago.com talking about the Blackhawks. And Scott, you look at the roster of the Blackhawks, and obviously the top six talent is second to none in the NHL. Taves, Hossa, Sharp, Kane, I mean, everybody knows those names. Does this team, is this team missing sort of the secondary scoring that Christopher Stieg was providing? He had 27 points in the 34 games played before he went down with the broken hand.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think Versteeg coming back is going to allow them to be a little bit more, just have a little bit more firepower across at least the first three lines. Where I expect Quinn was going to try that Versteeg, Richards, Kane line again, which means you probably bump Sharp to the third line. It's kind of maybe going to be Sharp, Shaw, and Bickle, or maybe Teravainen, and the rookie gets a chance there. But, moving someone like Versteeg or Sharp to the third line, obviously you add another offensive player there, too, and it should give them a little bit more balance where Bickle and Shaw have struggled a little bit in that fourth line, really hasn't produced over the last month. So I think getting Versteeg back, it also gives them an issue, too, where what are they going to do with this Teravainen kid who's he's shown a lot of talent. He's got high-end offensive ability. He's only 20, and he can get knocked off the puck right now, but you can see where his potential is. He just has this vision that not a lot of people have. So maybe he's someone that factors into it, too, and I could see there's a possibility where he stays in lineup and someone like Andrew Shaw maybe gets the bump to the fourth line.
Scott, a couple of days ago you had an article on Nicholas Jalmerson, and it was a really well-written article, and I recommend everybody reads it. And you even had a quote from Freddie Olesen in there, former Jets defenseman, who actually towards the end of his career in Sweden played with Jalmerson when he was just starting his career in Sweden, which Jets fans would really like. But I thought you made some really good points in that article, talking about how much Jalmerson plays on the penalty kill, and he's always up there in block shots and penalty kill ice time. Do you think Jalmerson is really underrated when you consider that Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook really seem to get all the headlines?
Yeah, and I think within the Blackhawks and around here that everyone's kind of considers and knows what Jalmerson does. But the fact that Keith and Seabrook, they're the guys that the All-Stars are, they're bought into the All-Star game and kind of who the Blackhawks market themselves around to, that he kind of goes under the radar. But, he's been part of that core. He's obviously been part of both of those Stanley Cup championships. And, someone they've signed long-term. So I think the Blackhawks understand how important he is. And, he does a lot of those little things that are, there aren't always in the highlights, but it was a fun piece to write. Even talking to some people in Sweden about him and just how he had this sort of mentality growing up, and then talking to his teammates. They were obviously had glowing things to say about him, and the one quote I thought from Michael Rosenwald was really telling about how he said that whatever that Jalmerson does, it kind of impacts the whole team, and sort of the feeling like maybe I should be doing the same thing. So I think just the way that he plays and the way he fights and his compete level, it seems to inspire everyone on the team as well.
Scott, final question for you here. The trade deadline is less than a month away, and Richie mentioned earlier Adam Clendenning was moved to the Vancouver Canucks. Do you think Stan Bowman's going to make any other moves before the trade deadline? And if so, what type of player do you think he might be trying to acquire?
Yeah, I've seen some rumors about maybe a bottom six player, maybe a bigger guy, give them some size. And obviously, I think the defenseman situation, it's something they may need to address, and I'm not sure Van Riems likes the answer. But the problem, and I sat down with Stan Bowman about a week or so ago, and he talked about it. He said that where they are with the cap, basically, if they're going to try to fill a void somewhere, it's going to have to be taking away someone from the NHL team now. So Who do you trade? You know, I mean, I think this summer they're going to have to address that a little bit more because they, you know, because of the salary cap situation and you know, having to pay Kane and Taves that they just won't have a lot of space next year, and they have to re-sign Saad and Kruger and some of those guys too. So, I wouldn't be surprised if they make a minor move if they can just to add an experienced defenseman, but it's going to be difficult just with their cap situation. So. If they do it, they have to probably trade someone that's already on the roster. So it'll be interesting. But Bowman said, you know, he's on the record that he doesn't expect making any major splashes.
Scott Powers covers the Chicago Blackhawks for ESPNChicago.com. He's a frequent guest on this program. Scott, appreciate your time as always.
No problem. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thanks very much, Scott. Take care. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. When we come back, more on the Jets and the Blackhawks.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Big thank you to Scott Powers for joining us to talk about Friday night's Jets-Blackhawks game. A game you can, of course, hear on this fine station and watch on TSN3 if you are more of a visual learner as opposed to an audio learner. This segment of the show is brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center.
Audio learner?
Yeah.
Sure, Drew, whatever.
Official dentist. I'll tell you what, anybody who heard that just got stupider, so you know, they don't have to worry about that. Official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey, that is Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. So, gentlemen, Friday night, the Jets and the Blackhawks for the first time here in Winnipeg this season. The Jets, of course, having swept the Blackhawks 3-0 in Chicago. You know, how big of a game do you think this is for the Blackhawks on the calendar? Never mind looking at the Jets' perspective.
Is it that big? No. I think for Taves, it's always big playing at home. I think the team probably gets up a little bit for that. I think the team looks, the Blackhawks, you know, coaching staff's going to look for some kind of emotional element to it. Taves coming back, Carcillo, regardless if he plays, just that element of it. And I think also they're going to be harping on the Jets beat us 3 times in Chicago. Big picture, it's not that big of a game for them.
Sure.
I know there are a few points ahead of the Jets, and the Jets could catch them conceivably, but there's some games in hand, yeah, and we know Chicago's eventually, well, at least we believe they're eventually going to turn it on a little bit more here. So I think he'll manufacture it. The best coaches do.
Ezzy, if you're Joel Quenneville.
Okay, hold on a second. Richie, are you curbing your enthusiasm here? This game is going to be massive.
No, the game will be great. I think it'll be a great game, but I don't think the Blackhawks are coming in here with, oh, this is the biggest game.
No,
of
I'm
the
just
year.
Saying, I'm like, just saying, like, if you have a ticket to this
game, it'll be a great game.
Put it in your pocket. What do you mean? Of course you do.
No, I'm in my seats for Friday's
which is,
game.
Oh, that's which good. Is, there'll be more popcorn in the press box.
Yeah, which is our preference. Yeah. Sit as far away from you as possible.
I actually like sitting beside Drew. The conversation's always really good. He'll throw in some politics, you know. I think as far as this game on Friday goes, I know Richie's downplaying a little bit, and that's why I'm the hype man.
Well, you asked what Chicago's perspective. Well, it's not like they're playing the Los Angeles Kings in a rematch of last year's conference final. Like, they're just not the same.
But when you're in the dog days of the schedule and you've been beaten 3 times at home by one team, and you're making
the dog days just yet. Yeah, the dog days is more like March, end of March.
No, I think the dog days have been like end of December, mid-December.
No, dog days is like towards the end.
Yeah, but dog days,
dog days
sort
of
in
summer is like the middle when it's kind of like, you know.
No, I don't think it's the middle. I think it's more
dog days
the
of
end.
Summer in baseball is like, what, July, end of July.
When you're in the
July.
Middle, of the, you're in the heart of the season.
I think it's towards the end.
We're 2 months away
Ream?
From the end of the season here.
Anyways.
The only person that can back me up here is Ream.
I don't think he's going to.
No, I lost.
No chance he's listening.
If you're Joel Quenneville, do you put Daniel Carcillo back into the lineup knowing that the Jets are so undisciplined and they might lose their mind to try and get revenge on this guy?
To answer that question, Richie, we might have different answers. I think you definitely put him in. I think that gives you a psychological edge. I'm not a fan of Dan Carcillo. I thought that hit could have easily been a suspension in the realm of 10 to 12 games. I mean, it was completely inappropriate. Matthew Perreault, it wasn't even part of the play, Richie. And Perreault, and Carcillo's been suspended, 6 times now?
Well, I mean, he's not a very good player.
I'm not encouraging that he plays because I think he has an impact on the game. I think, you know, a guy like Carcillo, if at the end of the season You know, he's got a few goals and a few points. You're happy with him. I don't think he's very effective. I think you play him because that can really be a guy that gets under the Jets' skin. The only problem with that, Richie, is if you put Dan Carcillo in the lineup, you don't know if he's going to bite someone, if he's going to try to stab someone with his skate. I mean, the guy's unpredictable.
The question is, from my perspective, if I'm Joel Quenneville, so put yourself in his shoes. If I'm Joel Quenneville, does putting Carcillo in the lineup galvanize your team, or is it a distraction? And if it's a distraction, you forget about him because he's not going to really help you too much. If his presence will galvanize the roster, then you put him in. Not what he brings to the table. No, he doesn't bring much.
Of course it doesn't bring much. I think it could distract the Jets way more than it could distract the Blackhawks.
Well, it depends, Drew. Or it will give the Jets something emotional to build upon after they've lost five games in a row.
Sure. I understand that point, too. But, I mean, if the Jets, you know, we have to get our revenge.
I personally think if I'm Quenneville, I wouldn't put him in the lineup.
Really?
Because this is it's a Friday night game. The crowd's always loud, and at MTS Center, it's going to be even louder Friday night. You know, it's not a school night.
Yeah. And have a few wobbly pops.
That's a factor, 100%. The Jets are a desperate team to get going here. You know, you get a big hit from Buffon, or somebody goes after him. The crowd gets into it. The team gets an emotional lift. They score a goal or two. Absolutely not. I don't play into that.
And you know, Richie, the Chicago Blackhawks have guys like Brian Bickle or Andrew Shaw, the more tougher guys. If they need to,
those guys play though.
Exactly, and those guys can definitely play, especially in the playoffs. So I think you make a good point. I think, you know, Winnipeg Jets fans, let's be honest, are looking for a little bit of revenge in this case. And you know what? If you think about it, Richie, the revenge can come in a victory. That's the ultimate revenge. If the Winnipeg Jets beat the Chicago Blackhawks, which would be the fourth time of the season, fourth out of four times this season, that would be the ultimate revenge. Let's be honest here. We don't need to see a Steve Moore, Todd Bertuzzi situation here.
No.
Nobody wants to see that.
The Jets have bigger fish to fry than this guy who comes around and doesn't play the puck. I mean, seriously, this team is falling out of the playoffs.
I get both of your points. My concern, or my thinking is that the Jets may not be able to control themselves and will focus instead of focusing on winning the game and then, you know, having Peluso fight Carcillo and that being the end
of
it.
I'm not as concerned. I don't think they can't. They need to take care of it if he's there. Take care of it and move on. I don't think, you know, and I think they would do that. And they can't get preoccupied with him and get more penalties than you need to. It's a fight and that's it. And if they won't fight, just move on.
Well, it's a fight between Peluso and Carcillo in the first, you know, 10 minutes of the game, and
he probably wouldn't even fight Peluso.
He might not, because he's a rat kind of player. He wouldn't stand up for his actions, or he'd say, "Oh, I want Perreault to fight me." Well, that's not going to happen.
No.
So, and then probably, you know, Peluso and Carcillo wouldn't play the rest of the game.
And Drew, with the stakes, what's at stake here? With the Jets losing five games and the Jets desperately needing a clean 2 points here because they're chasing the Chicago Blackhawks, they got to focus on staying out of the penalty box and winning this game and playing the structured way that was making them successful earlier. And I think I think Paul Maurice is going to have these guys ready to play. I think it's going to be an amazing game, and I think the Jets are going to be there, and I think they're going to win the game.
Let's talk about what they need to do.
Yes.
I mean, you're talking about a team that Vancouver couldn't transition quick enough against the Jets to create a ton of offense at even strength, you know, and their game's off the cycle a bit. And
their power play looked atrocious, Richie.
Vancouver's?
Yeah.
I thought for the first half of the game, they moved the puck beautifully. The Jets adjusted, I thought, later on.
0-for-6. How good could you be
0-for-6? I don't buy into that. There's a good chance. There's a couple of good chances there that they didn't take advantage of.
Well, it's been struggling.
Pavlik was very good.
It's been struggling big time over the last 3 years.
Sure, but I think this is the thing for me is how do you deal with the speed of this team?
The Blackhawks.
Yes, the Blackhawks. If you are, and the skill level they have is just as good, putting us better than a team like Philadelphia, top end skill. You're going to play open, you're going to lose. You have to be able to back off a bit.
This game's won at 5-on-5.
It's going to be a tough one.
Well, then let's talk about how the Jets can take it. Right now, as Scott Powers mentioned in the interview, the Blackhawks have broken up Keith and Seabrook as of late. Now,
let's simplify here. I don't know if Bufflin's playing forward or defense. Trouba plays against Taves. I like the matchup of the past. He's matched up really well against Taves and really shut him down.
By the way, we didn't even talk about that earlier. That was a goal.
That was
a goal.
That I will tell you my opinion on that. You can't go and meet about the goal after the fact and then call it back. Either you call it a goal right away or you don't call it a goal. If you didn't call it a goal right away, I had no issue with that because he did go through him and he pushed him out of the way to score. But you can't call it a goal right there and then suddenly move and change.
The problem that I had with that one is the official who, declared it no goal is the back official who's got a worse angle on it.
That's what I mean. Like the ref was right there who called it a goal.
That's right.
Okay, Trouba on Taves. You'll do
I guess your second pair are going to be Bogosian and Enstrom. You put up against
Patrick Kane-Lyne.
Kane, Richards, and Sharp.
Yep.
Okay? You take your chances with the rest. All right? That's to me what you do. The other way, you're going to get. You're going to get Keith, and if it's playing with Rundblad, then I don't think Rundblad will play with Keith
in this game.
That's not lasting. I think if you go back to Keith Seabrook, for example, they're going to get to draw the top line. Other teams aren't as concerned. You know, Chalmerson might draw the top line as well, but we know who the top two lines are here, really. If Kane plays, that'll be a factor. But we don't know if he will or not. If Byfuglien plays and it's a similar alignment to last night, these teams aren't worried about the Jets' depth scoring. The Chicago's a more dangerous depth team, but again, you're going to go top gun versus top gun. I like Trouba against Taves, though. He's played him very well in the past.
Well, obviously three games and three victories for the Jets so far. It'll be a fun night Friday night at MTS Center. You know, there's certain, you know, it'll be a good game to see, a game to look forward to any time that the Blackhawks, with their Winnipeg ties, of course, come back to Winnipeg. It'll be
another quick thing before we go to break. You scored the first goal against Calgary, the first goal against Vancouver.
And then you gave up the next goal very quickly thereafter.
Yeah, you have to improve on that. That, I mean, giving it back, and then the discipline thing, which we've harped on a lot. We've at least alluded to it.
And
we've harped
amazing.
On it for weeks and
Isn't
weeks
it?
And weeks. I mean, enough about blaming the refs. Take some onus. Take some ownership, excuse me, of these issues and deal with it. Enough's enough.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Marty Biron's going to join us. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
1 hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at LegalCurve, Facebook.com/LegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is LegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from TSN, from RDS, from the NHL Network, and the Director of Goaltending at the Academy of Hockey, Marty Biron. Marty, good evening and thanks for joining us.
Anytime. Good evening to you guys.
Marty, obviously brought you on. We're going to go around the NHL, talk about a number of different topics. Want to start here in Winnipeg. As I'm sure you're aware, the Jets healthy scratched Evander Kane last night, and not directly related to Evander Kane, but in your playing days, when there was a sort of a disciplinary issue with a player on your team, you know, how did that usually resonate in the dressing room? Did it depend on the team, depend on how the team had been performing as of late, or was there always just sort of a standard reaction to when a player got disciplined and got benched for disciplinary reasons?
It depends, and it also depends on the situation. And I mean, I don't want to speculate. I know there's some talk that he might have shown late in Vancouver and all that. But this was a big statement made by the Jets coaching staff, is because, you know, Evander Kane is obviously one of your top players. He's not played all that well, but he's starting to play a little better, and he's kind of going home to Vancouver, and then you're going to healthy scratch him. And to be honest with you, there's some guys that will respond to that. They will respond better, and you have to do your homework. You have to know who's going to respond and who's not. When I was still with the Rangers last season, at the beginning of the season, Matt Zuccarello, Pouliot, and Derek Brassard at one point or the other were benched healthy scratch for different reasons, for lack of performance, I should say. And then they all got together on the line and were probably the most consistent line for the Rangers all year. I've had guys here in Buffalo in my time that have missed a curfew and the next day either got really bag skated by Lindy Ruff or were just told that they were going to sit out a game from the press box. There's different situations, but it is on the individual and on the player to respond correctly to what you're being challenged by your coaches. So this one is on Evander Kane to, when he gets the chance to come back, to really show what he's got instead of just moping around and you know, trying to kind of just go in with the flow. You got to do something to show that you're responding to it.
Marty, we wanted to ask you about Devan Dubnyk, who was acquired by the Minnesota Wild. Since the Minnesota Wild have acquired Devan Dubnyk, he's gone 6-1-1. And his numbers are really crazy. You know, he's been really highly responsible for the reason why they've turned their season around. And we had Sean Burke on the show a couple weeks back, and he's been really credited with helping Devan Dubnyk turn his career around. How surprised have you been with the way Devan Dubnyk has played and how the Minnesota Wild have responded to the way he's played in goal?
I've been very surprised with how Devan Dubnyk has played, because I remember watching him last season, the beginning of the season in Edmonton,
and it was all over the place. Now, obviously, at that point, the Oilers felt like they needed to get somebody else in there, and that's when they acquired Ben Scrivens, and they had acquired Victor Faust before. But with Devan Dubnyk, I don't know if it was a lack of confidence or maybe not feeling it with the goalie coach at the time in Edmonton, but it was, there was no structure to his game. It was very slow. He was very slow in the nets, and pucks were going through him. It looked like he wasn't a big goalie anymore, and like he had lost his mojo. And then he bounced around, ended up going to Montreal, and I saw him in the playoffs last season as a black ace in Montreal, and he was their fourth goalie behind Price, Budaj, and Tokarski. And that was a major fall from the number one goalie in Edmonton to now being the fourth goalie in an organization. That was tough, and I think what happens to some athletes, again, is when you're being challenged, you either respond in two different ways. Either you kind of go with the flow and figure, like, my career is over, or you work hard, you find a spot where you're going to feel comfortable, maybe with a goalie coach that you believe in his mentality and how he teaches, and then you respond from it. And a lot of people gave Sean Burke credit for Mike Smith's turnaround, and obviously that was major. But this was a magician act to be able to turn Devan Dubnyk's career, his season and everything around like that. And now Minnesota, they gave up a third-round pick. I mean, that's a pretty hefty price for a guy that may or may not be a good answer in that. But he's just continuing on. I'm very impressed with the work that he's done. And you got to tip your hat to a guy like that that was able to respond in a positive way.
Yeah, Martin, when you look at goaltenders, obviously, you know goaltenders as well, better than anybody. Two goaltenders that stand out to me this season, Carey Price, who's been tremendous, and Pekka Rinne, who is returning this week from injury. I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you think those are the two best netminders in the National Hockey League right now, and why are they both so good?
Well, I do think they're the best, but the funny dilemma here is I think Rinne is probably the best goalie right now, which would get my vote for the Vezina. But I would give Carey Price the vote for the MVP and the Hart, because without him, the Canadiens wouldn't be where they are. I think Rinne has played extremely well, but his team is really supporting him with goals and really found a new way of playing the game in Nashville with Laviolette. But the world in which we live in now with goaltenders is you have to be able to play the game on your feet. You have to be able to move side to side laterally and be able to be in the right position to make the save. If you're not, if you fall behind, the acrobatic goalies that used to be the Hasek's and we could throw Tim Thomas in the mix a little bit, they're not as successful anymore because the game is too fast, too quick, and the guys can shoot the puck. Everybody can. So if you're not in a position to make a save, you're not. And you look at Pekka Rinne, he's a battler. He will move so quick for that bigger frame in net and just try to get any piece of his equipment in there. And he's able to do that because he's so well moving around. And Carey Price is just so calm to a point sometimes where you feel he's so nonchalant that yeah. Something is going to go in. But, man, this guy, there's nothing he can do that's going to hurt him. He goes behind the net to stop a puck. It's like he's going on a little Sunday stroll. And he comes back from the net, makes a big save. No big deal. I mean, that's just incredible to see. And he used to frustrate me because I would be 200 feet away from this guy. And I'd be like, I'm battling as hard as I can just to preserve like a 2-2 tie. And this guy, it's like, this is Pee Wee Minor stuff, and he's just having a good time.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. Our guest is TSN RDS and NHL Network analyst Marty Biron. Now, Marty, your buddy Henrik Lundqvist is not going to be in the Rangers lineup tonight after he took a shot to the throat on Saturday night against the Carolina Hurricanes. You know, in your time as a goaltender, I mean, I assume there's been probably more than one shot that caught you up high and sort of left you, you know, gasping for air or you know, similar to what Lundqvist faced on Saturday night. As a goalie, you know, what's it like to get hit up high with a shot like that that leaves you a little lightheaded as Henrik was during that game?
You know what? It's very difficult to explain it to somebody that's never, like, felt it. But getting hit in the head isn't a problem because the mask are so well built now that it just kind of skips off. It rings in your ears for a little bit, and you smell that burnt rubber from the puck that just hit your mask. But other than that, it's fine. It's when it hits you around the neck area or, like, around the wrist finger area up in the glove or up on the blogger side, those absolutely kill. And the funny thing is, if you get hit there once in practice, believe me, in the next 30 seconds, you'll get hit about two or three more times. It's like it's a magnet. It just attracts the puck exactly where you got hit. And for me, I remember a warm-up in Syracuse with the Rochester Americans, where I never used to wear a big bulky throat guard or neck protector, and I got hit right in the neck in warm-up, and I thought I was dying. I thought I was going to go to the locker room, and I was just going to collapse. That's how bad it felt, and I was scared for what was going to happen. And I kind of settled down, and then it just went all back to normal. But that is a scary feeling. And then my first year with the Rangers, I ended up breaking my collarbone. I took a shot up high, broke my left collarbone, and it was just plain stupid on my part. I didn't wear enough padding up top, and a lot of kids do that now. They feel like it's too bulky. They don't want to wear the padding. Well, you know what? It only takes one shot. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is Lundqvist wears a ton of padding. He wears a big neck guard. He wears the dangler, the plastic dangler. It just so happened that Ryan McDonough's stick caught him in the mask, lifted his head up in the air at the same time that puck came in. It is a fluke accident, but it is scary if you get hit in the throat because you choke for a little bit, you get lightheaded, and you really don't know if you're going to be all right 30 seconds later or not, and that's very scary.
Marty, if it's okay, I'm going to ask you another goaltending question. I think you should be all right with it. Yesterday in Toronto,
it was in Nashville, right?
There was a controversy. I think I know what I'm going to go with this. Yeah, James Reimer comes in for Jonathan Bernier towards the end of the second period. The Predators are up 2-1. Bernier cuts himself on the left leg. Reimer comes in, stops all four shots. But then when the third period starts, Peter Horacek goes back to Jonathan Bernier, and this was pretty controversial in Toronto. What was your take on what happened there?
Well, I think that was the right call. Now, if I'm a number one goalie or if I'm the starter and I play and all of a sudden I cut myself or I take one in the shoulder and I can't breathe really well and then I'm fine and I'm cleared to play, this is my game. I want to go back in and win this game because I'm playing well so far and it's not a muscular thing. It's not a full groin. It's not a possible concussion. It's a cut. You get it. You know, fixed up and you go back. You know, Bennett looks back to when Roberto Luongo in the middle of the, you know, overtime playoffs has stomach problems and he feels good. He comes back and he goes in the net. Doesn't matter where you are. You're the starter. You're the one that has played. Unless you had been missing a full period and now to come back cold would be tough. I didn't really think much about it. Now I hear all these things, how it's crazy that he went back in the net and could it be possible that Reimer was going to be getting the win because he was in net when they got the go-ahead goal and the goalie that started and finished the game wouldn't get the win at all? It was just a lot of nonsense to me because I just felt Bernier started. He was the guy that was going to go in. If any other player gets cut, gets stitches and come back on the bench, they're going to go back in the game. Kind of the same way for the goalies, but you don't see that happen too often, so I don't think we'll be talking much about it anymore just because that's not something that happens.
Martin, you look at the LA Kings. I want to ask you about this team. Obviously, you know, champions, you see the way that they just turn it on last year and in the playoffs go through seven-game series after seven-game series. But you watch them, catching them last night, seems like there's just something that's missing this year. And I know, you know, lack of Voinov and, of course, you know, some injuries up front and the Mike Richards distraction, but it seems like they're tired. Is that the read that you get on the situation? What do you think is their biggest issue right now?
To me, it feels like they're, and I'll use my analogy as a retired goalie. When I played goalie and every shot that you faced, it was a matter of life or death in the hockey sense is that you don't want to give up a goal. It could be a big difference. Now you're retired. You go in for an alumni game or with your buddies, and it doesn't matter if they score. There's no pressure. You don't have that feeling inside of you that, man, I can't get beat. It's that important. And I feel that's what's happening with the LA Kings because they've played so much of that playoff grind hockey over the last few years that right now, if they don't get the puck in deep, it's not a big deal. I mean, it's not life or death, Stanley Cup champion or not. We don't have to worry about it. If we don't backcheck as hard as we can, it's not a big deal. Well, that switch can be turned on and off like that. You have to keep it on the NHL for the whole season in the playoffs. The Kings have been able to kind of flicker the switch, dim it down a little bit, and then turn it on at the end. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's just not working. And like you said, with the injuries and losing Voinov, it's just piling on. So It seems like they're taking five or six steps back, but it seems like that fire, that look in their eyes, that they were going to take that face-off, and it was going to be Jared Stoll on the face-off, and he was going to win it every time. It's not there anymore, and that's because they've been used to playing such a high-tempo hockey that right now regular season just doesn't match it.
You know, Martin, looking, you know, you're a player who played in the league for many years, former player, I want to get your perspective on this. You know, the Toronto Maple Leafs and listeners in Winnipeg are probably so sick of hearing about the Maple Leafs. But from a player's and former player's perspective, considering the mess in Toronto and the pressure that comes with Toronto and just the abundance of media coverage, would you stay away from signing in Toronto and playing for the Maple Leafs because of all that if you were playing right now?
I wouldn't stay away from signing there because I think it's a great market. It's a great franchise. But I would ask a lot of questions, and those answers better be right. You know, I'm a free agent, and they're calling, and they say, we want to sign you, okay. Well, who else are you going to try to get? Like, what's the plan? What's the short-term plan? What's the long-term plan? Am I going to be there for the next 6-7 years, or is this just a 1 or 2 year deal? I knew there's going to be a lot of questions that maybe I wouldn't ask if it was a different team. If it's the Chicago Blackhawks calling, maybe I'm not asking that many questions. I'm just telling them, where do I sign, and hope the ink dries really quickly. And the Toronto Maple Leafs, there's a few more questions to be asked just because you got to prepare yourself for what you're embarking on. And I think that would be the only thing. But I still think that the players around the league are looking at the Maple Leafs organization as a top-notch organization, a great city to live, a great market to play in, and you know, bringing in Shanahan. I think these are all great positive things. But it's got to turn around because the Shanahan novelty that he's going to turn it and do a great job with them, it's going to wear off at some point, and they're going to have to make some big decisions.
Marty Biron covers the NHL for RDS, for TSN, for the NHL Network. He's also the director of goaltending at the Academy of Hockey. Marty, appreciate your time as always.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Marty.
Thanks a lot, Marty.
Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Hi, this is Drew Mindell. There's nothing worse than unwanted surprises, like finding out your favorite player just got traded, or getting internet overage charges. But MTS high-speed internet is unlimited, so you won't be caught off guard by overage charges. Switch to MTS high-speed internet from only $20 a month for the first 3 months. Conditions apply. Call or visit your nearest MTS store for details.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
There's serious concern amongst their coaching staff and their players about whether they're going to make the playoffs or not. I would, if I were in Bob's shoes, I would bet money, but I told you over 2 months ago that I thought they were in trouble when most people thought they were going to win the Western Conference. I could see it crumbling. And the Willie Mitchell problem with him leaving and going to Florida, and they would acknowledge that. That's a huge loss for them. And the Voinov situation, obviously a huge problem for them. The lack of speed up front, the injuries to Tyler Toffoli and Tanner Pearson are very problematic.
Pierre Maguire, speaking about the Los Angeles Kings, the struggling Los Angeles Kings, losers last night in Washington by a 4-1 margin. Really looked pretty awful in that game. Welcome back to NHL Midweek. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Eddie, did you get up to the river there?
No, I didn't because I've been sick for over a week now, so I didn't get a chance to check it out. I know Richie checked it out, and I heard that there was a wedding, a pop-up wedding.
There was a pop-up wedding, yes.
I still don't quite understand that. I mean, I'm still confused by, I mean, I saw the photos, and
well, Drew,
I understand.
Married. You understand marriage.
No, I understand what a wedding is. I'm just a little confused as to, like, people just randomly came into the Raw Almond tent and got married while you were having breakfast?
Yeah, our friend Aaron, who owns Bernstein's, was the justice of the peace of cake.
Clever. Yeah. You've been waiting to use that one.
I just thought of that now.
Oh, so really? Okay. Yeah. So anyways, yes, Bernstein's Deli was on the ice at Raw Almond, and it was fantastically reviewed.
It was sold out a couple times.
Apparently on Saturday there was a lineup of like 80 people.
That's what
That's
I heard.
What
I heard
it was Chad and Cut.
Yeah, Remus Chad and Cut on Saturday, of course. We talked about that. But if you missed out on Bernstein's at on the river, check him out at the corner of Cordon and Lanark.
Yeah, check him out on cement.
Yes, check him out on cement within four walls, yeah. The non-canvas walls as the case may be. So, gentlemen, last time we asked about a team that you know is a time to start worrying about. That was the Boston Bruins, and since then they've firmly established themselves in a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, you both wrote them off.
Yes, we both wrote them off exactly. And
if you go back and listen, we all agreed they were going to make the playoffs, but it was the window closing. Richie says no, or sorry, no, yeah, and I said yes. But no, I mean Boston's not missing the playoffs. That's not.
Boston has bounced back clearly. Record,
Richie's revisionist history is.
The Los Angeles Kings are currently sixth in the wild card spot with 54 points, a record of 21-17-12. If you want to look at strictly on wins and losses, they're 21-29. 8 games under 500 when it comes to their winning percentage. How concerned are you about the Los Angeles Kings at this point in time? We've seen them struggle before and then turn it on late.
Yeah.
But to this extent and with this many teams, you know, sort of ahead of them in the standings?
Well, Drew, first off, I want to say that I'm glad that you put this in the show plan. Hey, I saw this.
Only for Drew.
Well, no, I because I think the LA Kings right now are in trouble, but I'm going to say this much, Richie. You know, you might be in 12th, and we know that Arizona and Edmonton are the only two teams that are actually mathematically out of it right now.
They're not mathematically out of it.
I mean,
but yes.
they're at a point where they'd probably have to win 95% of their games.
Not going to happen,
right? So the LA Kings are still only 7 points out of a playoff spot. Now, 7 points at this point in the season, Richie, is a lot of points. But I think if there's any team. I mean, and you're talking about a team that was down 3-0 in the first round of the playoffs last year against the San Jose Sharks. So if there's any team whose backs are against the wall and are going to be counted out and have the ability to come back, I think it's the Los Angeles Kings. And I know we played the clip from Pierre Maguire. There's a few things, Richie. First off, look at their road record. It's one of the worst in the National Hockey League. That's atrocious. I watched the game yesterday.
Their road record is 5-11-6.
Oh, it's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah.
That they've only won 5 games on the road.
Tied with Buffalo and Edmonton for the fewest road wins this season.
Yes. So and you look at the LA Kings and what's going on here, Richie? And you know, Pierre Maguire touched on it. To me, okay, yeah, you lose Willie Mitchell. Willie Mitchell, who's now the captain of the Florida Panthers, big physical defenseman. He was your bottom pairing defenseman, provided leadership. To me, though, it's all about Slavoj Voynov. To me, you look, and again, Drew Doughty. If you watch Drew Doughty play this year, he's Norris candidate. Drew Doughty's game hasn't fallen off.
Yeah, I agree.
It's the absence, Richie, of Slavoj Voynov. To me, you know, Slavoj Voynov, on a lot of teams, he's a top pairing defenseman. But you got Jake Muzzin and Drew Doughty who pair up on the top pair for the Kings. But to me, having Slavoj Voynov, that whole issue, you know, with surrounding his DUI and his suspension from the team, the cap ramifications, Dean Lombardi having to put Mike Richards on waivers, sending him down to Manchester, when we know that he probably should have handled that either with a buyout during the offseason or a trade, which we're told that, you know, he shopped
Mike
Richards around.
Well, there's nobody's trading for him right now.
But you know what I mean, right, Rich?
People say that Mike Richards didn't hold up his end of the bargain about getting in shape.
Right. But to me, I mean, Mike Richards is not one of the major problems in LA. I think you look at this team.
Not based on last year, considering he didn't contribute much until the playoffs. I agree with that. He was a fourth liner. So yeah, I agree with you. You're right about that. Pearson's injury is huge for the speed element up front as well.
Right, but I think if you look at Dustin Brown's
skating.
If you look at Dustin Brown's offensive numbers, what does he have? 15 points?
I mean, last year too.
I look at this team here, and you know, Andre Kopitar's having a good year. Tyler Toffoli missed a bunch of games, you know, but he's been pretty good this year. Nobody was expecting Tyler Toffoli to have 80 points this year. Right. So you can't. I mean, he's a second year player. To me, this team, the point that Pierre Maguire made for me is the team lacks a lot of speed, a lot of that coming from the back end. I mean, a guy like Braden McNabb, Richie, I mean, he can't replace Slavoj Voynov. I mean, Braden McNabb is a 7-8 defenseman on most teams.
That's right.
To me, Slavoj Voynov is so important to this team that that's one of the main reasons why they're struggling. You know, Jonathan Quick, maybe his numbers aren't as good, but Jonathan Quick's a top 10 goalie in the NHL. I think we'd all agree with that.
His numbers are terrible. from the start of this year. October, he was fantastic. He had a .942 save percentage in October.
I mean, those don't tell everything, Drew. I mean, they leave him out to dry a lot.
I know, but he's got an eight. I mean, look at the just the save percentage. There's actually a very good article by Dave Lozo, Bleacher Report, and I'll tweet it out, talking about the Kings themselves and their issues, and he goes through them point by point.
I think he hasn't even mentioned all of them.
Yeah, .942 save percentage in October for Jonathan Quick. .915 in November. .901 in December. .878 in January, .852 thus far in February.
Is his window closing?
Clever. No, the window's not closing, but I think he's tired.
Played a lot of hockey. The team in front of him is not as good as it was before. They seem to lack motivation. I think they will turn it up here a bit, but I do have big concerns, as he mentions, Voinov. I think that's a very good point. I agree with that puck movement from the back end. Pierre McGuire mentions Willie Mitchell. I think he's obviously they miss him as well. I think the other factor, though, is you watch them and you want to talk about the issues that they're having in creating offense. They can't create enough speed
right
to create offense, and that's a problem. Watch Vancouver yesterday. The Sedins at even strength, having a lot of problems creating offense with the lack of speed. It's such a fast game now, guys. I mean, you can't clutch and grab. You can't put a stick on a stick. You can't put a stick on a body. You got to be able to skate. It's teams that have trouble with the lack of speed, right? So you look at it and you say, okay, well, what's different than last year? Why were they able to succeed last year? I think they're tired. I think Tanner Pearson's really improved his skating, and not having him in the lineup hurts them. I think Voinov hurts them because he makes up for a lack of speed in the sense that he can make the pass and he can join the rush. Now you're having guys having to come back and supporting lower down. Why? Because they don't have a guy who can make that pass anymore in the second pairing. And then these are issues that contribute to these problems, because Willie Mitchell certainly isn't fast, not that they've replaced him with anybody who's really a great skater either. But that's a big point, right? You have to be able to transition. You have to be able to play with speed, and they're not really able to do that. Also, when you can't have some of your guys like Dustin Brown and Williams and those guys, they flourish in a certain type of game. They probably flourish a little bit more when there's a little bit less pressure in terms of one or two or three goal games. And you mentioned Jonathan Quick, that being an issue and having to create off, down 2-0 yesterday against Washington. Having to come back from those, they're in tough positions because, their team is not going to give them too much. And they're better off playing those close games, leaning on you and hoping for the turnovers. They're not going to play run and gun like Chicago. They just can't do it. That's an issue as well. There's a bunch of issues here. And also, let's be honest, guys, they played a ton of hockey.
Sure. Yep.
Well, they played a ton of hockey. No, they're tired.
You know what, Richie? When Drew brought that up, I would say most of the time, I really wouldn't factor that in here. But you watch the LA Kings, and the LA Kings last night, Richie, you mentioned it against the Washington Capitals. They did not look like they looked like a team that was tired,
listless. They had nothing. Really. Their tanks were on empty.
This is again. I didn't think the LA Kings would finish first or second in the West. I thought they'd certainly be top eight team.
Not that they need to finish first or second in the West, given how we've seen them succeed.
They won the Stanley Cup in 2012 as an eight seed.
Yeah.
So I mean that means nothing. And that for Jets fans, if the Jets finish seventh or eighth and get in the playoffs, that doesn't necessarily mean that they can't go on a run, right? But this LA Kings team, to me, especially going back to those Stanley Cup years when this team was tough to play against and they would punish you physically. Dustin Brown.
That's even last year,
I know. And you miss a guy like Willie Mitchell. Slava Voinov's a physical guy. You miss these players. Mike Richards can be a physical guy. I think that this team still has tons of depth. But I think you name all these players that we've taken out. These are key players. And I know you always hear about, despite injuries, we can still overcome this. But I think when you're talking about Slava Voinov, you're starting to, and we don't even know if he's ever going to play for the Kings again, guys.
My guess is he doesn't,
He's a very good defenseman.
I don't know. I think that, Toffoli's back in there. He's playing yesterday, but the truth is him and Pearson were able to help this team.
He's talking about Voinov.
Yeah, but I want to get in here at Pearson because we talked about Voinov.
I thought for a second you did the Ezzy where you weren't listening
We're not going to get into Voinov's legal trouble. We don't know the situation. We're not going to project whether or not he comes back in Los Angeles' lineup. We don't know that. I mean, none of the situation is. What we know is that Toffoli comes back, him and Pearson were able to create some offense and secondary offense with Jeff Carter throughout the beginning of the year and certainly last year, right? Now you had to load up for a while when you had the injuries, and that's hurt them as well. So, Toffoli's got to get back into it here. But him and Pearson are able to create offense, inject some youth. They were part of last year's cup run, but before that, they were guys who aren't tired. That's a big loss for them.
Sure.
And the secondary is growing. You mentioned Mike Richards, his ability to contribute something. You know, obviously, he's been an issue. Now he's in the minors. He scored tonight, actually. So.
He did.
We'll, you know, we'll see what happens with him if he gets into better shape. Because again, he made, you know, the word is he made Dean Lombardi a promise
to be in shape.
He'll be in shape because Lombardi said, you know, I don't want to break up the core, but I'm going to have to. And he said, no, I'll be in shape.
Maybe a couple of weeks from now they bring him back up, and he's a big part of them, you know, getting back into a playoff.
I wouldn't
spot.
Be surprised if they bring him back up. I would be probably a little more surprised about that latter part, Ezzy. But you never know. I mean, the guy's been there before, so these are all issues. I think that Cody Franzen makes a lot of sense there. And you're going to say, well, Cody Franzen, you know, he's not a great skater. Sure, he's not a great skater, but he can make the pass. He can make the pass to get him out of the zone. He plays a physical game and can lean on you, and he's got a big shot, and he can play the point on the power play, and on the second power play, because Drew Doughty's going to be a right-handed shot in the first power play.
I
like all the elements of that.
You have to give up a first-rounder there?
Well, apparently the Leafs are looking for a second. I think LA may be willing to do something like that. The question is, when we get to that point, are they too far out of it?
LA, I believe, has an extra second-round pick that they acquired for Lyndon Vey, if I'm not mistaken, from Vancouver.
I think you're right about that.
So, I mean,
what
it is a
possible. You know that off the top of your head. I'm impressed by that.
I'm impressed by that, too. Wow. There's very little I know.
Yeah.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the Eastern Conference of the NHL. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is NHL Midweek.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
25 minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, and this segment is brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me.
I'm happy to have Royal Sports, as a sponsor. I've been going to Royal Sports forever. You know, they have those great tent sales.
Mm-hmm.
And Pemina, great stuff. Very pumped up about that.
I think they're very excited to have you frequenting their place even more often than before. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they were a little put off when you were sleeping in the tent overnight, though. I think that was a bit of a problem.
Yeah, I didn't realize that the tent was there just to, you know,
for the sale, not for you to be napping underneath it.
I thought it was like a party tent
honest mistake, but yeah, it's good that you learned that error of your ways. Well, anyways, welcome back to the program here on TSN 1290. It's amazing that, you know, this is what, February 4th, and the NHL's Eastern Conference playoff teams are pretty much set at this point in time. I think we can clearly say that with a 7-point lead, Boston is not going to get caught by the Florida Panthers. And with a 10-point lead on the Philadelphia Flyers, they're not going to get caught by Philadelphia.
Philly's made a nice little run here, but I agree with you, Drew. In the East, and it's surprising because I thought, certain teams, Florida is one of those teams I thought would have some more wins, New Jersey, Philadelphia. But it's the West, really, that we're seeing right now. 12 out of 14 teams are really in it.
Yes, I would agree with that comment. I'm trying to think the last season where the NHL really hasn't had much of a playoff race, like there, because there isn't one in the Eastern Conference this year. It's going to be some jockeying for position, of course, but certainly not a race in and of itself. Wanted to spend the next couple minutes talking about each team's best, most favorable matchup, and then the worst matchup that they could possibly face when the NHL playoffs begin.
Drew, before you get to that,
oh boy,
you said favorable.
Yes.
And I just wanted to play a clip here of someone saying who their favorite member of Illegal Curve is.
But Ezra Ginsberg, look, Ezra and I, going all the way back, you know, we shared a hall for our bar mitzvah together. And so we've been that kind of close ever since then. I named two of my children and my dog Ezra after Ezra Ginsberg.
You just made someone's year, you know that.
Well,
right?
Listen, Ezra doesn't need me to build him up. We all understand just how significant Ezra Ginsberg is.
I totally understand naming your dog after you. That makes perfect sense.
That was Mike Greenberg.
Yeah, that's Mike Greenberg on with Hustler and Lawless back at Radio Row in Super Bowl.
Reem, thank you for playing that clip because I knew that, you know, I was off for a couple of weeks. I knew you guys wouldn't play that. I just want everybody to know I only had to pay Mike Greenberg $100,000 to say that.
Only $100,000.
No, impressive. But in all seriousness, though, Gary, you know, hey, Gary, I didn't realize that, you know, Gary and Huss at the Super Bowl were, my biggest hype man out there. I thought that would be, you know, the three fine gentlemen in the room. But
now you should know better. It wouldn't be us. Anyways, 0% chance it was going
to
be us.
I had to get that in there.
Okay, very good. Well done. So let's back to the question I had about the, you know, the best matchups, the most favorable matchups, and then the worst matchup for each of the eight playoff teams in the Eastern Conference right now. We'll start at the top of the East with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Is there anybody that, you know, you really think that they, you know, are would not want to see in the first round, and a team that, you know, they're more favorable to play against?
Rich, I'll tell you who they don't want to see in the first round, but who they will definitely not see in the first round, the team that swept them last year, the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah, you know, as, go ahead. You can.
Well, I think Montreal's probably going to finish second or third. I mean, you know, you never know. They could finish first, but I would be surprised.
You don't see Boston catching up to Detroit and Montreal, is what you're saying?
Well, actually,
6 points.
You know, it could happen, but I don't think, because Tampa Bay is also going to be up there, Richie. I don't see Tampa Bay and Montreal playing in the first round. They might play in the later rounds, but you know, I look at Tampa Bay, and there aren't too many teams. I don't think they're scared of anybody. You guys know I picked them to win the cup.
The Islanders and Tampa to play in the conference finals. Both leading their division.
Yeah, well, why do you think he's Rick? He's Mike Greenberg's boy.
I always got to qualify that by saying I didn't pick the Jets, the Preds, or the Flames to make the playoffs in the West either. And I also picked the Devils. So the Devils are doing horribly. So you know, I got to take everything with a grain of salt. But you look at, you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning right now, and they have four lines that can score. I love the, you know, the guys like Brian Boyle and Brendan Morrow, those veteran grinder guys.
What's their tough match? We can get through every team in this,
okay, hold
this,
on.
In this segment.
But
here?
I'm just saying, for me, Tampa Bay, you know, because they're such a fast skilled team. I mean, I don't think they want to play Boston. Richie, by the way, I don't think anybody wants to play Boston. If you're the Islanders, even. Or the Habs? Do you want to play Boston in the first?
I think I agree with you that Boston's probably the toughest matchup. I can't tell what's worse, the idea of the segment itself, or how long this answer is taking to get through every match.
And I didn't say anything. I talked for 2 minutes and didn't say anything.
I think Boston, I think Boston is a matchup they wouldn't want to play, because they want to play a fast, up-tempo style, and I think Boston's going to be a team that plays you more physically and hems you in your zone and challenges you that way, and has Tuukka Rask. So I think that would be the hardest matchup for them. And, it, you know, look at the bottom of the standings in the East of the top eight. If you look at it that way, that would be, you know, who they could draw.
Sure.
But I do think that would be a team they don't want to play. I think Detroit and Montreal, they're playing with their own game. I think they could have a very good chance of beating them.
Yep.
Then let's move to the Metropolitan Division, where they're led by the New York Islanders with their 65 points. Do they, you know, have a preferable matchup and a matchup they want to avoid as much as possible?
Well, you know, I'll jump in there, Richie.
Sure.
I think the Eastern Conference playoff race is going to be
exciting.
I mean, you look at last year, who expected the New York Rangers to get to the Stanley Cup? Certainly not me. I mean, remember the New York Rangers, they were in danger of missing the playoffs last year.
Sure.
And then they went and played the Montreal Canadiens, who had that nice run, and then obviously Carey Price going down, and we all remember that. But if I'm the New York Islanders, and again, you know, you go back a couple of years, you know, them giving the Pittsburgh Penguins a good run for their money. But again, where does Pittsburgh finish? It's so fluid. If I'm the Islanders, I want to play the Pittsburgh Penguins in the first round. You know, you look at how they match up. The Islanders have obviously made some acquisitions on the back end with Nick Leddy and Johnny Boychuk. Pittsburgh right now, they've got all types of problems on defense right now. And I like the way Marc-Andre Fleury's played. Obviously, he was, you know, in the All-Star game. But if I'm the Islanders, Richie, I know that right now they don't match up against each other. But based on the way they played them a couple years ago and the fact that they're even better than they were 2 years ago, for me, I'd probably want to play Pittsburgh.
If I'm the Islanders and you're looking at this Metropolitan Division right now, I don't want to run into the Rangers because of the experience that they have and because of Lundqvist.
That'd be a hell of a series, for the record.
That'd be an amazing series for everybody, for fans of the game in general. They don't have to be a New York sports fan, but that would be great to capture the New York sports scene.
Yeah.
Especially with the Knicks being terrible and not being, you know, just before baseball. It would be right when baseball's getting started, but, you know, football's kind of off in the NFL draft, I guess. But that idea, I think...
NFL draft's in Chicago this year.
Okay, that's... Right, but that's what you want to. That's what you want to. I'm talking about the attention to it.
I know.
That's what you want to, you know, avoid. I think is you're the Islanders. You want to play a fast paced style. You want to play against a team like Pittsburgh, as you mentioned, with a Flurry to be able to get under his, you know, get under his skin and boom, make him lose confidence.
Hang on, a Flurry against Flurry.
A Flurry against Flurry. Yes, true. Of course.
But that was unintentional, that pun of yours?
That was totally unintentional.
I want a McFlurry right now.
Yeah, well, you say a McFlurry?
Yeah, he said a McFlurry, and you know, I said a flurry as a... Anyways, that was a good pun by you unintentionally there, Richie. Go on, sorry.
Well, I think that's the team you want to play, because the Islanders are a four-line team, right? The Islanders are a team that comes at you with speed and skill, and if you can get on a team like Pittsburgh that maybe doesn't have the depth that they've had before. I don't think they do personally.
Actually, Richie, I should mention, you know, I didn't realize this. Actually, the Islanders would play Pittsburgh right now.
No, they wouldn't. No, they wouldn't. The Islanders would play. Incorrect. The Islanders would play Washington right now.
So, I was looking.
Pittsburgh would play the Rangers. By the way, I don't think Pittsburgh wants to face the Rangers.
I was looking at it 4-5, but they're both in the Metropolitan. Sorry, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Look at the wild card standings, not the divisional standings.
The thing you have to understand is the Rangers own Pittsburgh.
Yes, they owned them last year, and they own them this year again.
And the Rangers, you know, if you look at dangerous teams in the conference, I think nobody wants to face. See, I think the Atlantic Division are the teams that are more dangerous than the teams in the Metropolitan. And I have respect for the Metropolitan teams. I still think Pittsburgh has flaws. And I think we're a little bit early in terms of prognosticating.
There's 8 points, Richie. Sorry to cut you off. There's 8 points that separate eighth and first.
And that, as it's that. And I think the other factor that you need to take into account is what do these teams do before the deadline?
Sure.
Because I think Pittsburgh's going to make a move. And I think that...
They need a defenseman, Richie.
Well, I think they might try and top up that top six that they have. No pun intended there as well, Drew. And I think you look at... You know, you look at
where's the pun there?
Top up.
Top up the top six? Yeah. It's not really a pun.
Yeah, that's whatever.
I think it's a pun.
It's a play on words.
No, it's definitely... It's a play on words, but it's not a pun.
What is it?
It's a play on words.
You know, I need to...
You need a break?
I got, you know, I can't
Kit Kat?
I can't wait to work with Rick on Friday after this segment here in this hour and 45 minutes.
Do you think that's mutual? You think Rick feels the same way that, you know, he finishes the show tomorrow afternoon. He says, you know, I can't wait to work with Richard on Friday.
I don't think Rick knows that we're even working together on Friday, and we'd be assuming that he's listening now and would then be forewarned of that. But
generally, anytime we know that Rick's listening is he'll send us a message and say, stop talking about me.
Well, Rich, I can tell you this. When I did pre and post with Rick, he didn't make eye contact with me.
Let's go to break. When we come back, NHL news and notes.
You're listening to NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
One final segment on this Wednesday evening here on TSN 1290, and it's brought to you by Not Auto Corp. Be sure to visit their beautiful new luxury auto and art gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery. For more information, check them out online at notautocorp.com. Gentlemen, some injury news from around the NHL, where we start with the St. Louis Blues. Kevin Shattenkirk out week to week with an abdominal injury. He's going to need surgery on this one. You know, how serious of an injury is this for the Blues, you know, chances of making a lengthy run in the playoffs if he's out for a significant period of time?
Well, I mean, it's significant, Drew, in that he helps your trade. I mean, obviously he's a dynamic offensive year, but if you're looking at their top four, I mean, he's a huge part of their top four, huge part of the ability to move the puck out of their own zone, huge part of their power play. I mean, this is a significant injury. We don't know when he's coming back. Mm-hmm. But you talk about matchups and the Blues. I like that Blues team this year, and I still have questions about their goaltending. That's been a consistent issue. I think you might like what they have now. I just don't trust Brian Elliott if he's going to be the guy. He's just not a guy that I have faith in, really. But Shattenkirk's a huge injury. If you look at Voinov, we talk all about LA and Voinov's injury. Like right-handed defenseman, moves a puck, key to a great team's transition game, and it's a massive loss. I think St. Louis has great depth up front. On the back end, they don't have that same depth to be able to replace a guy like that. It's going to be very interesting to see how they deal with that.
Right, Richie, you make a good point. They've still got the two big horses back there in Alex Pietrangelo and Jay Bomeister, and Carl Gunnarsson's done a good job. But as you know, having a 40-point right-handed shot defenseman is like having a 20-game lefty in the majors. I mean, there aren't a lot of these guys in the NHL. And, you know, Shattenkirk, you know, I wouldn't put him as a Norris candidate right now, but, you know, second in the NHL scoring for defensemen, second to Giordano. I don't think he's even close to as good as Giordano defensively, or when you're talking Doughty, mm-hmm. Weber, Suter, mm-hmm. these guys. I think Shattenkirk's more of an offensive guy who has problems on the defensive side of the game.
Yep.
I think Pietrangelo is a better all-around defenseman, Richie. I think you'd agree with that. But having said that, you look at Shattenkirk and you have to hope that he's out 2 to 3 weeks as opposed to 2 to 3 months, because if he's out, you know, and obviously the Blues are making the playoffs.
It's the playoffs that's the issue.
When it comes down to the playoffs, and you have the ability, as as you mentioned, you know, he's got 4 power play goals this year, 8 goals on the season, 40 points. Great playmaker. He's the guy, you know, that you put out there, and he really makes things go from the point. So, again, you have to hope. I think that they're not going to – I don't think – you know, Shattenkirk's injury is going to set them back. Maybe they slow down a little bit. But this Blues team, I mean, with the emergence of Tarasenko the last couple years, and the way this entire team is playing right now, you know, Laterra has been a nice addition there. I don't see this. I think this team is still going to finish top 2 or 3, whatever it is, in the West, Rich. And, you know, but again, if he's out in the playoffs, they'll miss him.
Well, look who's going to be coming in now. I mean, you mentioned Gunnarsson. Sure, you might like what Gunnarsson's bringing. Barrett Jackman is not the same player he was before. It's going to put more pressure on guys like Butler, Ian Cole.
Yep.
And hey, this is not Shattenkirk. Now, again, if he comes back with the playoffs, they'll deal with it until then, because they're going to make the playoffs, as you mentioned. If this injury is more serious and he's out for part of a first series against Chicago, that's huge.
Pekka Rinne returns to the Predators' net tomorrow night when they play the Anaheim Ducks. How surprised are you to see him back in the lineup this quickly?
I mean, is it that quickly, Drew? I mean, they said
missed 8 games.
Yeah, a few weeks. You know, it's what, 3 weeks he missed just about. Mm-hmm. That's about what I thought he'd probably be out for. And then you kind of, based on what they were saying, and you never know with injuries and the teams and leading all that on, but he gets his break now. I think that's a huge break for a guy like that, because he is the horse. They want to make a run here. This is not a team that's looking at just, you know, getting them playoffs. They're looking at making a run. He's now rested. They're going to ride him. Laviolette's going to ride him down the stretch here. So I'm not shocked, and I think that overall this will benefit the team long term, and they certainly withstood that pretty well. You know, beginning it was a little bit shaky, but look where they're at right now, and he's back, and this Nashville Predators team is not just here for a short time.
Are we overlooking them? Sort of the whole
I don't think they're you overlook them, Drew, because with Rene and Nett and Martin Barron says, you know, Vezina Trophy winner in his mind, in my mind as well, he's a Vezina Trophy winner, so long as he puts up enough games.
Still leading the league in wins and everything else.
You play up against that team, that defense that they have, and the offense and the different guys that have contributed this year. Yeah, sure, you have some, you know, you're a little bit concerned. They don't have those big-time horses to rely on in the playoffs. And what guys like Ribeiro and different guys, their game translate when it matters most. That might be an issue. But do you want to play against that defense and goaltender in a series? How are you going to crack the net and scoring-wise? So for sure, I don't think fans may be overlooking them. This is not a team that other teams in the National Hockey League are overlooking.
It's not smoke and mirrors. I mean, Peter Laviolette has done an incredible job. Nashville is making the playoffs, and they're probably going to be, again, a 1 or 2 seed in the Western Conference, mm-hmm. Rich. So I think you got to give also a lot of credit to Carter Hutton. He did a great job, you know, in the absence of Pekka Rinne, and they sent Masnik back to the AHL. But you got to give Hutton credit. I mean, Hutton has developed. I mean, you could argue that Hutton could be a number one goalie for certain teams. And, you know, now Nashville has this depth, because we remember last year they didn't have that. And, you know, when Rinne went out, it was the blood clots, right? He had the blood issue that he missed most of the season last year. They just couldn't. Pekka Rinne is the best goalie in the league, and when he's on his game. And so I think it's good that he's back. But you know, they didn't miss him much. I mean, they're playing pretty well here. And you know, just quickly, Drew, on the Nashville Predators. You know, Shea Weber, deservedly so. He could easily win the Norris Trophy this year too. I would pick if I'm picking him. But you look at Seth Jones, had a goal last night. There's no signs of a sophomore slump. I mean, this team, Volchenkov, even former Devil, former Senator, I think has done a nice job there. I mean, this team is, it's not like they're a one-trick pony here. I mean, they've got some depth.
And Roman Josi's a player that people don't talk about a lot. Very good player. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a horse there. Left-side guy. I mean, that he is a good all-around defenseman, can do it all. And you don't play as much as he does unless you're the real deal.
According to TSN's Rick Westhead, ESPN is back in the hockey game, having purchased the World Cup of Hockey rights for the United States, the national broadcast rights in the U.S., as opposed to NBC in the Comcast relationship that the NHL has had for the last number of years. How surprised are you that ESPN is back in the hockey game?
I'm surprised, especially how it was apparently handled in Canada, which appeared to be questionable in terms of the bidding process, that... You know, the NHL, for whatever reason, and I don't agree with it, has decided to go with two networks for television, one in the States and one in Canada, whereas every other sport has multiple networks involved, which I think personally provides better coverage for the viewer and because there's a competition involved in that. Now it's, you know, you have it, and we can do whatever we want. Doesn't really matter.
Well, you watch in the NFL broadcast, and they're cross promoting. They're, you know, the CBS guys are promoting the Fox broadcast.
I don't even care, and that is something that you see in NBA as well.
Yeah,
and even in baseball, I think you're seeing now. But Drew, I'm more talking about the product.
Sure,
you're competing for the viewing audience, and what's happening there is you're creating a competition between the networks, and I think that that promotes better quality of broadcasting. And I'm happy to see that they've done that in the States because, again, to that point, it's creating a better quality of broadcasting.
Don't know the terms or the details on it.
I would be shocked if I found out they offer the most money.
ESPN.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that they did either. I think it's just very interesting by the NHL.
Oh, no, I think they did offer the most money.
Oh, you think ESPN offered the most money?
Because the NHL's taking bottom.
That's the reason why I'm on this show. You guys offered me the most money.
That's true. Yeah, we were able to outbid Mike Greenberg. It's amazing. But, you know, I was surprised to see that. All of a sudden, ESPN's back in the hockey game. I don't think anybody saw that coming.
No, it's great. I agree with Richie. Competition's great. I don't like the Walmart day and age we live in where one corporation sells the toothbrushes. So, I think it's great. You know, I agree. Have more networks, share the wealth. Drew. I give a lot. I give it back to my people.
The best part of that story, mind you, is that the NHL didn't tell NBC that they lost the bidding rights until after the Super Bowl so that they could continue to use the NBC hospitality room during the Super Bowl festivities in Phoenix. Apparently that's pissed off NBC. So not only has the NHL managed to get into business with ESPN, but they've also managed to piss off NBC at the same time.
If you want to read into it a little bit more, you could wonder how much of an effect this will have on NBC, the Olympics, and the NHL's participation in 2018.
Well, there certainly would probably be, there's probably something going on behind the scenes in that regard.
Because we know everybody wants to see Canada against the assortment of junior players from North America in the finals of the World Cup 2016.
Right. It'd
be great viewing for that.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see Canada play against Nathan MacKinnon and Jacob Trouba in a game that nobody cares about.
Big thank you to our guests this week on NHL Midweek, Scott Powers from ESPNChicago.com and Marty Biron, TSN RDS and NHL Network analyst. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on iTunes, TSN1290.ca, and on IllegalCurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Royal Sports, and Not Auto Corp. Follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website with your latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. For Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Michael Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Saturday, 12 noon, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this fine station. Until then, we wish you good night and good luck.
You've been listening to
NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.